Welcome to the Nerd Journey Podcast. Our goal is to help you, the technology professional, accelerate your career progression, increase your job satisfaction, and be more effective in your existing role.
We want to bring listeners like you the career advice we wish we'd been given earlier in our careers.
I'm John White at VJourneyman on Twitter, sharing co-host duties with Nick Cordy at NetworkNerd _.
We're two former IT operations guys who have moved on to pre-sales roles with technology vendors. We have our opinions, but we also like to highlight the journeys of others and see what we can learn from them.
We'd also like to ask for your feedback to make this a conversation, not a one-way broadcast. Email us at nerdjourneypodcast@gmail.com or DM us at nerdjourney on Twitter. So come join us on our nerd journey.
Let's take a trip. Episode 273, Bring It On. This is the second installment in our book discussion of Finish by John Acuff. And we have a special guest host, Mr. Jason Guess. If you missed part one of our discussion in episode 272, Jason shared his reasons for bringing the book to our attention and how it can help anyone who's looking to make better progress toward finishing their goals. There's a very interesting personification of perfectionism, or perfectionism as the villain, keeping us from accomplishing the things we want to. We talked about chapter one, The Day After Perfect. What do you do when the streak is broken or when you can no longer pursue your goal perfectly? How do you handle that? And we talked about chapter two, Cut Your Goal in Half. How can that actually help you accomplish what you set out to do? This week in part two, we'll discuss the next three chapters of the book and our reactions. But to tee it up, I want to ask you a series of questions. As you pursue your goal, what are some of the things that you are willing to give up or get rid of or spend less time on to achieve that goal? How are you motivated to actually do the work to achieve a goal? What are the things that drive you to actually take action? And are you getting distracted? Are there things that seem more interesting or that feel like you should do them before or instead of the goal you want to achieve? The answers to all those questions and more coming your way as we continue with part two of our discussion of Finish by John Acuff.
Yeah, let's make that transition. Chapter three, choose what to bomb. The only way to accomplish a new goal is to feed it your most valuable resource, which is time. And what we never like to admit is that you don't just give time to something, you take it away from something else. So to be good at one thing, you have to be bad at something else. That's just a realistic thing. You have to choose what it is that you're going to be bad at in order to prioritize this thing that you want to be better at.
What I really liked about the book, he brought in examples of real people that he had talked to or he had interacted with. And he even talks about his examples of when he was writing books, what he's going to bomb at. They talk about, well, maybe you need to write and, you know, maybe you don't get to see your kids for a period of time. They're not saying that you totally abandon your family, but you have a period of time that you have to set out and do a goal. It could be, you know, whether you're educating, you're doing a class, you're doing a certification, you're going for your master's degree. And the only time that you have to study or read or do that time is, you know, maybe when your kids are awake. They talk about, hey, this is not end all be all. You're not going to abandon your kids for the next 5 to 10 years. You're just taking a break of, hey, I'm going to spend the next 6 to 8 weeks focusing on this goal. And then afterwards, you play catch up. You know, I finally figured out I'm just going to outsource stuff in my life. I used to love mowing my grass and having that perfect grass in the neighborhood. I finally just decided I got tired of all the time it was sucking out of me. And especially in Texas, when it's 110 degrees outside, I found out real quick. I was like, I don't really want to do this anymore. So I'm fortunate enough that I just found a good lawn guy. He comes, shows up every Friday. He does that work. That's 2 hours. He does it in like 20 minutes because he's got a full crew. It took me 2 hours to do the same thing he can do in 20 minutes that now I can now apply to one of my other goals.
The decision to be bad at something, which is really just putting your time or using the snowball effect and putting your time and energy in the right spot to accomplish your goal prevents you from having to have a conflict mentally later. Like, you don't have to decide later. You decide it in advance, saving you even more mental cycles as you work toward what you want to accomplish. This is the decision I'm making. I don't have to think about it again. It's done. I can keep going with what I want to accomplish now. Like, for me, I'm bombing most communication with people on the weekends. You know why? Because I'm podcasting. Like, that's just what I do.
My wife hated grocery shopping. Absolutely hated the grocery shopping. Well, now we got a meal service. You know, I never thought I would have three meals delivered to my house, but it relieved stress. It doesn't mean that we still don't grocery shop. We get the basics here and there, but it relieved that task that we just didn't want to do. And we're now able to focus on spending time doing activities that we'd rather do than going to the grocery store and buying groceries. And now I know not everyone has that luxury, that ability, but there's always something I feel in our lives that we just don't want to do. And if we can trade or outsource so that we can work on something else that's a little bit more energetic or more fulfilling, it's a good handoff.
And it's also, it's a planned thing and it's an intentional thing, right? So if you say, listen, you know, grocery shopping consumes like 90 minutes of my week that I can't get back and it's not fulfilling. It's like, can you get, you know, grocery delivery service at a fixed rate that can handle some of that for you and then make it, you know, super simple? You're like, oh, there's just one thing I'm going to run in and out. And now it only takes like 10 minutes at the grocery store. Then that's, you know, pretty much a win. And it certainly is more of a win than, oh, I ran out of time. I didn't grocery shop. Now I need to order unhealthy takeout from a restaurant that's, you know, more than my budget and less healthy than I wanted it to be. And we're accepting that instead of the planned expense, you know, up front. And that might not be the right trade-off because, you know, we're planning for perfection, you know, again, back to chapter one, and then just throwing our arms up and handling the consequences. I think my wife isn't fully on board with this, but every once in a while, I'll invest in like fluff and fold for my laundry. Like, I'll, instead of doing it, I'll drop it off and then pick it up same day. And the time suck is not doing the laundry. It's usually folding the laundry. You know, I look at the charge of that and I go, what I'm paying for here is somebody else to fold my laundry. Like, actually washing it and then actually putting it in the dryer, that's less than 10 minutes of time. It's the folding and putting away. You know, that's the time that I'm getting back.
I did the same thing before I got nice synthetic wrinkle-free shirts. I dry clean. I don't even own an iron. My wife and I aren't going to iron. We flat out said we're not going to iron. It's $2 a shirt. I got 10 shirts, $20. So, and that's 2 weeks.
I wanted to ask the question, and you guys tell me what you think. The whole idea of choosing what to bomb is about managing your time and where to focus your time and energy. I also think that choosing what you're going to be bad at sometimes is a decision you have to make when you start to build expertise in an area where you don't have very much. I'm going to be bad at this. You know, as you've said many, many times, John, expect to be bad at the thing you start doing that you haven't done before, where you're trying to build expertise. So I know I'm going to be bad at this. So I need to be bad at something else, as in get rid of it so that I have time to be bad at this, and then maybe that time gap will go down.
Oh, yeah. So when you're starting out trying to build a skill, you have to put in extra time because you're not an expert at it. So you're going to need extra time to do the thing. So you also have to get rid of other things that you're spending your time on. You know, a major thing that's budget here is maybe television, or, you know, hopefully there's like a bunch of extra slack time in your life that, you know, things that you can get rid of. I think we've talked about Cal Newport's books before, Nick, and kind of the fallacy of that, like, dopamine hit of, you know, social media or watching a short video. It feels like you're accomplishing something, but the thing that you're accomplishing is getting a dopamine hit for completing something that gets you no actual productivity. It doesn't actually do anything for you.
Yeah, I like the example that he talks about in the book of Breaking Bad, because I've gone through it twice. But then when you do the calculation of how much time it takes to go through these TV series, because you have 7 to 9 seasons and they're 45 minutes each. And I can't remember, it was like 60 hours of actual time. It's like, well, what could you accomplish during that period of time? And I've never been into it, but you know, I have friends that are really into music. They know bands, they know the lyrics. I have friends that are really big into sports. They know every athlete, where they went to high school, they went to college, where they play in the pros, who's been traded. And I've selectively in the past just realized that's not important enough for me to be at that level. I have other friends that really got into the TV series, especially when they're live on TV, you know, when Friends was on, when Seinfeld was on. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. The Office, never even seen it. But the whole concept of binge watching has come out in the last 5 to 8 years. And because now we just rush through it. We don't have to wait every year when the new season comes out. People just kind of wait until it drops. And you hear about people that will go through it in 2 weeks. The amount of hours that people put into just watching a TV show. And not saying, hey, I still like to watch TV. I watch an hour at night before I go to sleep. But I've gone through that where 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I went through the entire TV show. And then after it ended, I look back, I'm like, what did I do the last 3 weeks? All I did, I would watch 6 hours in a day.
Yeah.
My wife and daughter know that I'm going to be bad at TV. Like, they know that I'm completely mesmerized by television. So if someone's watching a show and I walk into the room, I might just pause and stand there. My wife will be like, what are you doing? Do you want to just sit down and watch this? And no, I don't. I got to leave the room.
I remember when I was building up my career, I never got much into gaming. And when I did finally get a PlayStation, I was playing it. I've hardly ever finished a game because I would get partially through it. And I think the last one I did was Red Dead Redemption. I'm going through it. One day after a week, I was like, I could be spending my time studying for my next certification to help progress my career. And so then I turned off, started studying, passed my certification. I've yet to ever finish that game. But I have used that thought process after I've gone through a period of time of, you know what, maybe this isn't the proper use of my free time. And not to say that we can't take time for entertainment and download and watch a TV show, play a game here and there, but it gets into the point of how much time do we put towards that extracurricular activity versus one of the other goals that we really want to accomplish.
Right. Is one of your stated goals to get through this video game or get through binge watching this series, or, you know, what is it that you're getting out of it? Is it one of your stated goals? Because if it's not one of your stated goals, then you are accomplishing something that is not a stated goal at the cost of something that is a stated goal. And that's probably, you know, the wrong math. And if it is important enough for you to say, listen, I need to binge watch the series, and one of the things that I'm willing to let go is this other goal that I've actually set, then that should be intentional. It should not just be a side effect. You have to consciously, or you should consciously let go of the, oh, you know, I'm going to the gym or exercising for 45 minutes a day. No, this video game and accomplishing it is more important than this 45 minutes of going to the gym. That needs to be a conscious goal, not just something that, at the end of the day, now I've run out of time. So be conscious about those things. Like, that's all. And then let go of the shame of it, right? Maybe you set the wrong goals. Maybe the video game is more important.
That's the hard part, the shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly.
This gets into the next chapter, though.
Yeah, so let's go there. Chapter 4 is Make It Fun If You Want It Done. Here's a quote from the book that was pretty good. Perfectionism believes that the harder something is, the more miserable something is, the better it is. The fourth lie it tells you is fun doesn't count. Acuff says that we can add fun to a goal by looking at the things that motivate us. Maybe it's approach motivation. You're motivated by a reward. Or avoidance motivation. You're motivated by fear. What do you think, Jason?
I started taking some of those free activities, whether it was a TV show or a movie, and that became a reward. You know, I would spend the hour studying, or I'd spend the 2 hours studying when I was going for my Cisco certification. I would go and spend X amount of time labbing, reading the books. And then at the end of the day, hey, I got to watch one or two episodes of a series that I wanted to watch. Because then that was my reward of getting through those chapters or reading those videos or doing that lab time. That became the reward of the fun side of the goal.
Yeah, dangling the fun as an incentive for continuing to make progress. I think it's a really good coping mechanism or tool to use. It definitely hit me in a positive way. I think the flip side of that was people who are fear motivated, right? So there are two things I think he says maybe about halfway through the chapter. Some people are reward motivated, like, and that works for them. But some people are actually fear motivated, which is, oh, I need to do this thing because this horrible thing is going to happen if I don't. And that's okay if that is how your brain or your psyche works. And so I think the example, which I've heard in other places before, is like, you know, write the check to some organization that you completely disagree with, and then have a friend, you know, hold you accountable. Are you tracking towards this? Are you doing this thing? Did you accomplish it, you know, in the time that you said you did? And if you don't, then they mail a check. That's an example of fear motivation. Yeah. I think it's valid, like, to harness whatever it is that's going to help you. And then make sure that it's well planned out. If you say you're going to do this thing that's a reward, and then you have to abandon the reward, then, you know, sometimes you're going to abandon the task. And that's not a good thing either.
You hear about it a lot in financial planning. You talk to financial planners, especially retirement planners, and they talk about they have these same two customers. They have one customer that, hey, I want to do this all of my retirement. I want to do all this traveling. I want to make sure that we're set up, prepared, so we can go spend time with the grandkids. We want to travel the world. We want to do all this stuff. And then you get the other one that the fear of, like, hey, what if we don't have enough money? The fear, what's going to happen if we can't cover our medical costs? Both are driving forces, and there's not one saying one's better than the other or one's right or wrong. In the end, they're both driving forces of you accomplishing your goal. Okay, what's that outlook look like? Are you fearful of not having enough money, or are you more interested in having enough money so that you can do all this fun stuff?
My argument, John, is that most people are not as intentional as you were talking about earlier. They're not as intentional as Jason was talking about figuring out if they're motivated by fear or reward most of the time. Call that a hot take or whatever you want, but I just think that we busy ourselves and we don't think about being intentional as much as we could. So reading stuff like this is helpful.
Yeah, I think that the intentionality is something I got out of, like, cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, and I'm probably just butchering the entire concept, but this is what I kind of took away from it. Is like, listen, so you have that perfect streak. Don't self-sabotage yourself by, you know, again, in the exercise example, like, I'm just going to sit down and watch a little bit of television, like, in the back of your mind, you know, thinking, like, this might, you know, break my streak. Like, if you're going to sit down and watch television and break your streak, make that decision in the front of your mind, not in the back of your mind. Maybe even say it out loud. I have decided that today I'm going to watch television instead of exercising, and see how that sits with you before you sit down. And then, you know, live with that. And I think you're right. I think that people are also not intentional about setting out their rewards or understanding even if they're reward or fear motivated, right? It's probably not like a, you know, binary thing. It's probably a little bit of both. And you should figure out, like, the right mixture of those things. A lot of fear motivation, like, when it hits people, is like, well, I don't want to be fired, so I'm going to work on these tasks. That's fear motivation. And the flip side is, man, I love doing this part of my job. I'm going to do some of this, you know, stuff, like, eat my vegetables, and then really, like, revel in the part that I really love as a reward. And that is more of the reward side. You're right about intentionality.
Here's an example that's like an accidental double check mark. For a series of different tasks, I had completed them on the day they were due 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And there was another one that comes up, and I'm like, you know what? I have to finish this before close of business. Like, there's no reason I can't. So I think it was the day before it was supposed to be completed. I'm at a Starbucks. It's about 4 o'clock or so. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to stay here for a couple more hours. I love drinking coffee. I love Starbucks. If you know me, you know that I don't go through the drive-thru. I'm going to sit inside because I want the experience. So I sat in Starbucks with a cup of coffee, worked on the stuff that I needed to do for 2 more hours, and avoided being interrupted by anything else I could have been interrupted by if I had walked in the door and my wife and daughter wanted something from me when I got home. It was awesome. Like, it made me feel great. But I think that even in that situation, it wasn't intentional, until the very last minute realization, like, oh, I could do this. You know, I could have been thinking about it 2 or 3 days before that. Oh, I'm going to be right by a Starbucks anyway for this other thing. So why don't I just stay there?
This chapter also looks at the goals and the sense of just fun in general. Exercise always seems to be an example. And so there's people that, hey, well, I need to lose weight. So they start running. And then they stop because guess what? Running's not fun to them. But they have this mind, I have to go running. Well, what if you did something else that was fun and you still accomplish your goals? He talks about perfectionism comes in and says, a goal can't be fun. And that's wrong. Well, what if you decided to play pickleball? Pickleball is really big right now. Well, that's a form of exercise. Could you still become healthy and get exercise by playing a sport that you like versus running? My wife's a huge runner. She's done marathons. We've done some runs together, but I've realized I'm not a marathon runner. I'll do a 10K, 6.2 miles. That's still fun. And we do it at Disney World. So we run through the parks. I don't care about my time. It's about the experience. But 6 miles, I don't think it's fun anymore. You'll never see me do anything more than that. You'll never see me do a marathon. I had fun. I had experience. I did it with my wife. I trained with my wife. I still got the same results, but my goals doesn't have to be the same goals as hers. And she was like, hey, I want to go do a half marathon. I want to do full marathon. I was like, hey, that's fine. That's fine. I'm not doing that. I know my limits. And that was it. So I think we have to look at when we create goals, there's got to be a fun aspect to it. And this is interesting. All goal books talk about SMART goals. If you go back the last 20 or 30 years, we've always talked about SMART goals. I have to look at my notes of what it spells out because I always forget.
Specific.
Yep. Measurable.
Achievable.
Realistic.
Time bound.
The joke he talks about is that you could use those 5 words to describe broccoli or cauliflower.
Yep.
If you've ever listened to any of Tony Robbins stuff, he adds on to this. You know, we have to have these measures, but why are we doing this goal? People forget about that. The emotion tied to the goal. If I'm going to eat healthy, well, that's not fun. He talks about the why aspect. Why are you going to do that? Well, I want to be healthy so I can go travel, or I want to be healthy and active now so I can stay. If you have grandkids or younger kids, like you want to be healthy for that. I had an episode where this kind of fell in line with me. I was never a gym person, but last year, finally, after sitting at a cubicle all these years, it finally caught up with me. And it got so bad, I had back problems. I was scrunched over. I couldn't even put my socks on without pain. I felt like I was an 85-year-old man. And we kind of talk about this, you know, fear or pleasure. We hit this mark of like, enough is enough. I called up a trainer friend of mine, got in, creating programs, started going to the gym. It was kind of painful in the beginning, but I started seeing those results. And so the why around this goal was, I want to feel better in shape so that I can go do all these other things that I haven't accomplished in my life, all these other goals, travel goals, and being healthy and fit. And so the why of why I'm doing this, not just because I want to eat kale every day to be healthy. We know that goal is not going to be achievable.
It's a good mixture of reward and fear. I want to be around to see this, and I certainly want to, you know, avoid the, you know, the flip side. And I think adding in fun, you know, the way that you said is like, well, maybe it's not, you know, working out with my trainer 7 days a week. Maybe it's pickleball on these days, and maybe it's going through a walk around like fun neighborhoods on these other days, and maybe it's a little bit of running. Maybe it's some other things that are, you know, mixing all those things in. And maybe that is like the unstated part of the achievable in a SMART goal. You know, in order to make things achievable, maybe you have to think about, you know, making them fun rather than the strictest version of, you know, what somebody else thinks is, you know, should be. I think that goes on to like one of the sections, you know, how to read 100 books in a year is like, hey, maybe you need to redefine what reading a book means. Like, so, you know, listening to an audiobook, you know, at an accelerated rate, that counts. Does reading a comic book count? Yes, it does. Does reading a graphic novel count? Yes. It's not just 500-page books by candlelight. What other things are you going to add on to that? Oh, it has to be hardback. Oh, it has to be leather bound. Like, how do any of those things like affect like the ultimate goal of like ingesting more knowledge and, you know, actively reading? expanding that stuff.
I look at creating goals as it's a game and we want to finish. Well, let's create the rules of what that game looks like. If you can define the rules, then you have a better chance of finishing and completing that goal and winning the game.
Okay, let's transition to chapter 5. Leave your hiding places and ignore noble obstacles. The closer we get to finishing a goal, the potential to be distracted by something else only increases dramatically. It could be something that seems more interesting to do, or maybe it's a feeling that we have to do something else first before we can pursue our goal.
Hey, it's April. Everyone's doing their taxes right now. The first one to me in my mind is like, you know what? I can't do my taxes because my office is a mess. I got to clean my office first. How can I do my taxes if my desk isn't perfectly clear? So then I start cleaning your office. That's what they kind of talk about hiding places. We are fearful of doing a goal or starting a goal or accomplishing a task. We hide in another place. We find something else that we feel will accomplish a quick win, but it's really we're just hiding in a place that we can get away from the other one.
Delaying.
Yeah, delaying the inevitable.
So the definition in the book, which I think is a good framing definition, a hiding place is the safe place you go to hide from your fear of messing up. It's a task that lets you get your perfectionism fix by making you feel successful even as you avoid your goal. So the I'm cleaning up my office, like that's important. But really what I'm doing is I'm avoiding my taxes.
I can 100,000,000% identify with getting new ideas for cool stuff as you get close to finishing something. Like this happens so much before I finish editing an episode and publishing it. I can't tell you how many times I've thought, oh, we could do this. I could do this. I should reach out to that person right now. And really what I should do is write that down somewhere and do it later.
He talks greatly about this. It's almost the shiny object approach or the squirrel approach. Is the closer we get to the 85 percentile, the 90 percentile, we're almost done with the goal. It's amazing how our brain starts finding all these other cool things that we want to do or other cool topics or ideas or goals that we want to do. And we get distracted. We're like, oh, we got to start that now. But then it's real easy to walk away and forget about that other goal. Nick, you hit it on the nail head. Is goals will create creativity of other goals. But we have to be the mindset of, hey, I don't want to forget this. This is something that I want to do. I need to write it down so that I can plan for maybe after I finish this goal, then that will be next and not just forget. And then you mess up both because that's the starting process and not the finishing process.
Let's make sure that we define the noble obstacle as well, because that was the other half of this chapter. The noble obstacle is the capital, very good reason you cannot pursue your goal, right? So it's these, maybe again, reemphasizing these unconscious rules, right? I can't do X until Y.
I can't eat healthy until I finish eating all the unhealthy stuff in my pantry.
Oh, that's a great one.
The example I thought was great. I can't work out because then I'll get too big and then I'll need a new wardrobe and I can't afford a wardrobe.
Yeah. It's an attempt to make your goal harder than it has to be so you don't have to finish, but can still look respectable.
And I've seen this like home projects. I'd say, hey, this huge goal, and I always called it like the domino effect. Well, I can't do this until I do this, but I can't do that until this. And not saying if I had just sat down and created like a plan and put the goals together so that it was much more organized, but I always would say I can't do this until that, but I always did it in my head. And I think that's where people get caught up. When you do it in your head, you make it a lot worse than it really is or a lot bigger than it really is. There's something about writing down those steps on paper because then you can organize it. And then you can say, okay, I can't do this because I need to build or I need to buy or I need to do, I need a micro goal at that point. At that point, you can create them as smaller goals before you get to the final goal. Like it's part of it. But you're building the steps out of that point and not just building up your head and like, well, I'm frustrated. I got 20 steps to complete this project and I don't know where to start.
I think that is super powerful. And it is a reason that I had a real problem. I had a real negative reaction to this section I mean, overall, I absolutely understood and agreed it, but it was the until and the chains. And I went, you know what? I intentionally will do a reverse timeline on a project, right? This needs to happen, but in order for that to happen, I need to do this first, and this before that, and this before that, and this before that, and this before that. So I know where to start. And it was a little bit, it felt like an opposition of this thing. It's like, I'm not creating barriers. I'm actually defining the things that I need to do in order to accomplish the goal. And I think that intentionality and the planning and the, okay, so now I know where to start, and then actually starting, is the difference between a barrier and a plan. If you say like, oh, I'm not going to cook today because it doesn't, like, I can't cook until my sink is clean and I have all these dirty dishes in it, so I just can't cook. And you stop instead of going, so I need to start cleaning all the dishes in my sink so that I can cook. And doing that early enough that you can cook for the meal that you need to cook for.
Yeah, he could have emphasized more, because this is where I think the chapter was lacking, is that this is the time to plan and get it out of your head. The chapter was just about you put it in your head and you leave it in your head and then you don't do anything. I felt like he could have done a little bit more around, okay, you know you need to do all these actions, take them out of your head, create a project plan. That's all individual goals to go after the main goal.
And then execute, yeah.
Right. And I feel like this chapter almost hinted upon imposter syndrome. This book's not around imposter syndrome, but I feel like this is where it ties into. I've done so many things where I was building something outside. I was building concrete countertops and I stopped myself from building them on a timeline because I started thinking in the back of my head, I'm like, who am I to say I'm good enough to do this? And so I talked myself out of doing it because it goes into, until I know how to do this, until I'm a master, I can't do this.
I can't even start.
Yeah, I can't even start because I don't know all the skill sets. He doesn't talk about this per se, but it's almost hinted on that this is where imposter syndrome starts.
Yeah. I can't save for my kids' college because I don't know how much I need. Yeah. So I can't save anything.
Yeah. I think in retrospect, my negative reaction really warranted just like a light critique. It's just like a light, oh, yeah, I understand what this is saying. And I just wish that it was, you know, emphasized a little bit more about, oh yeah, that this is the difference between the very good reason I can't start and creating a project plan, like, the things that I need to do in order and then actually starting them. Those are two completely different things.
I'm going to be so much more mindful about calling people out for noble obstacles after reading that.
Yeah.
Including calling myself out for it.
Yeah, is that the quote-unquote very good reason that you can't start?
Yep.
Before we wrap up this chapter, and this I thought was interesting, is Professorum says it can't be easy. And this is where he says, easy isn't easy, but it works. And so the quote was, instead of making things complicated and difficult, instead of giving in to noble obstacles, finishers stack the odds before they even start. Professionalism always makes things harder and more complicated. Finishers make things easier and simpler. The next time you work on a goal, ask the following questions in the middle of the project. Could it be easier? Could it be simpler? For some reason, we feel like if it's easy, it's cheating. We've associated that. And I'm not sure exactly where that stems from, but yeah, I think it's very powerful of at some point, why does it have to be this hard? If we're worried about the end result, and that's the main thing that we're trying to accomplish, as long as we get there, I think that's the most important thing.
No, we calibrate accomplishment with level of difficulty, right? That's the part of it. Like, oh no, like one element of the judging criteria is level of difficulty. I know that that's the case with like the vault in like Olympic gymnastics and Olympic diving. If you do the very simple dive perfectly, that's not necessarily as good as doing 80% of perfect at like the most complex dive and, you know, possible. So level difficulty somehow creeps into our judgment of accomplishment as opposed to what's important about actually accomplishing the final goal as simply and easily as possible. If it's being healthy, then doing it in a simple, easy way instead of doing it like the hardest way possible. Oh, I want to be healthy. Great. I'm going to be a world-class marathoner. That's my route. Unless you have other things to comment on this, like this perfectly dovetails into chapter 6, which is get rid of your secret rules. Perfectionism is a desperate attempt to live up to impossible standards.
The phrase choosing what to bomb is actually kind of abrasive when you first hear it. It's almost like saying, what will I fail at? What will I not be perfect at? It's an admission that you can't do it all and you have to make a choice. What can you eliminate or spend less time on to achieve the goal? What are you willing to give up so that you can pursue your goal? If the answer is nothing, then you're not going to be able to free up enough time, or there's a potential that you're not going to be able to free up enough time to focus on completing your goal. In the spirit of making goals fun, have you really thought about whether you're motivated by fear or reward? Which one might make you want to take action the most? It might depend on the situation, for sure. But I think that this idea of rewarding yourself or being afraid of something happening and letting that be the motivation to do something, that might be a good way to avoid or prevent procrastination, maybe keep it at bay, keep it from being as bad as it might be. We tend to procrastinate things that we don't want to do. Hiding places, oh man, that one kicks me in the face really hard because he talked about email in the book. That is 100% a hiding place. It gives us that dopamine hit of productivity. And I feel like sometimes I end up going there when there's something I need to do, but just don't want to do at that second. And then I'll find myself wandering into my inbox. And it's probably easier to do because many of us leave email open during the workday all day. Not everybody does, but a lot of people do. If that's you, then maybe it means that you need to close it. Keep yourself from getting into it so easily. If something is naturally a hiding place, you can make it more difficult to find yourself there and set up some guardrails. I think a noble obstacle is sort of like a manufactured dependency that can delay your goal. I loved what Jason said about writing down the things we need to do, making a project plan, or like John talked about, making a reverse timeline. I actually think that that process could show you if there really are dependencies in the steps you needed to complete, and if you're manufacturing a dependency, like the example in the book about the guy who said they needed to have a garage sale before he could do any kind of cleaning to the garage. Does this thing that you're saying you need to do, does it stop you from taking any action at all? That could be a problem. It could be a noble obstacle. As you notice, the format of our book discussions is a little bit different than our normal interview style when we have a guest. But we'd love to hear what you think about this style of discussion so far. Send us an email, nerdjourneypodcast@gmail.com, or contact us on social media, links in the show notes. Send us one specific thing you liked or didn't like about this style of episode and why. What can we do to improve? We'd love to hear from you. And if you're looking for more book discussions that we've done on the show, we'll make sure all the links to previous episodes that are book-specific discussions are in the show notes. Next week, we're back with a part 3 that will start with secret rules. How can you identify your secret rules and get rid of them? Thanks, and we'll see you next time.
Farewell, listeners. Tune in next time as the journey continues. I'm John White at B Journeyman, for Nick Cordy at Network Nerd _, signing off.
Adios.